Lake Effect continues on WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. How would you react if a member of your family suddenly died and then he didn't? That's the conundrum faced by members of the family at the heart of Wisconsin writer Rebecca L. Brown's new novel, Flying at Night. The book tells the story of a Madison woman named Piper, her son Fred, and her very difficult father, Lance.
It is Lance who collapses and dies suddenly and then turns out not to have died after all. But it is clear he is not the same person he was before the incident. In fact, the family is coming to terms, in some cases reluctantly, with the truth that many people are not as they once appeared. Rebecca Brown will talk about the book tomorrow evening at Boswell Book Company. But ahead of that, she is with us in the studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
If I understand correctly, there are a couple of real-life stories or real-life situations that inspire some of the key events in this novel. What was the first spark that set the story in motion for you?
The first piece was, about 11 years ago. We went through a diagnosis for my son of high-functioning autism spectrum disorder. And he had had problems in elementary school academically since kindergarten. Just never quite getting what he needed to get. The reading came slow. The math came slow. And by the time he got to fifth grade, we were wondering if there was a learning disability or something else going on. And so we actually took him to a pediatric neuropsychologist for a battery of tests, fully expecting that what would come back was dyslexia or a processing disorder. And what came back to us was a high-functioning autism diagnosis. And that was a huge surprise. I taught children with autism early in my teaching career, so I really felt blown away by this diagnosis because I felt like I should have seen it coming because I worked with children with autism. I knew what autism looked like, but I didn't. And once we kind of got past the shock and kind of what the next steps were, looking at his life and his personality and everything about him in totality, there were a lot of subtle signs that we just kind of wrote off as just a quirky personality. And I mean, he did have some of the typical things that you see, obsession about certain topics when he was young, like Fred in the book.
Eye contact, things like that?
Some eye contact, but I didn't notice it. That was something that the neuropsych pointed out. And when she said it, I said, no, of course that's not a problem. But the more we kind of, my husband and I stepped back and could look at everything, it made sense. Every time I talk about this, I promised him, because he's in high school now, that he said I could talk about it if I also talked about how well he's doing and that he is now almost a 4.0 student in high school and is on a team sport for the first time in his life, has friends, and was one of the first kids to have girlfriends in seventh grade. So that was exciting. So he's doing really well now. But that was the first kind of impetus for the book.
Well, and so how much of Piper's reaction? Piper in the book is the mom. Fred is the son. How much of her reaction mirrors your own? Because she was really kind of in denial for quite some time.
You know, there are parts of it that definitely came from my experience. And then there are parts that were a little bit exaggerated or embellished. One thing that was true was that he kept having trouble and he kept having trouble. And I would notice these kind of weird little things. Like in preschool, they couldn't have fire drills on the days that he was there because the loud noise, he couldn't handle it. And I just thought, oh, well, that's really nice of them to do that. But that was actually something that was probably a cue. But I was waiting for a teacher to say, hey, this isn't quite normal, but that didn't come. And so that's the same. And when I go back now, I've talked to some of his early teachers, and they're all very surprised because they said he was incredibly high functioning even then. So some of it is the same, yeah.
Right? And a lot of what transpires in the book is kind of this bewildering experience that they go through when they're working with both the neuropsych and the officials at school and a particular advocate. And I imagine, you know, even if we're not talking about a high functioning autism disorder, anything along those lines, this is a very familiar feeling to anyone who's kind of gone through the IEP process,
right?
With schools.
And it is. As a parent, you want the best for your child. You want to believe that wherever they go in life, it's going to be the absolute best, most wonderful life story you can imagine. And so when you bump up against these obstacles, it rattles you because you don't know then what's going to happen next. And that was kind of one of the big things that I had to get over. And it ended up that it was silly because he's doing great. But at the time, you know, I didn't know that that was coming.
There's another key character in this story, and that is Lance,
yes.
Piper's father, Fred's grandfather. And do I understand, was there another real-life
yes.
experience that inspired Lance's story?
There was, and it's funny that you ask about that because I just had a comment from a reviewer who said this couldn't possibly happen. And it did.
Thank you, reviewer.
Yes. We have a family friend, and several years ago, he was 42 years old. He went out for a run, super health, an athlete, two small kids at home, went out for his hill run, came home, sat down on his front lawn and collapsed and had a heart attack. And we don't know how long he laid there. They were guessing it could have been up to 20 minutes. And someone found him, did CPR on him. They got his heart beating in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. But he got to the hospital and they said, you know, he's going to be a vegetable. There's nothing there. So they took him off all of the machines per his wishes and took him to hospice. And once he was off everything at hospice, we took turns visiting him. And the first day that he was there, I stood next to his bed and he opened his eyes and they said, well, you know, he'll it's like an infant. They open their eyes. They don't know. And he looked at me and he said, do I know you? And that was kind of the first step to this, like, I still get goosebumps talking about it because it was so surreal. Everyone had said goodbye. You know, this was the end. And he's now walking, talking, New York Times, reading, driving, working person. So it can happen. They think that because his blood was so heavily oxygenated that kept his brain alive.
Which is the case with Lance,
right.
In fact. Hopefully, this person you know, not as difficult a character
as
Lance.
Oh, no.
Well, and so you write from three points of view. You write from Piper's point of view, Fred, and Lance. As the story opens, though, Lance's chapters are written from him as he was then known as the Silver Eagle. But after he has his medical emergency, that persona slips away, and he's just writing as Lance.
It does. One of the things, what I recognized when we went through this with our family friend and then reading and researching traumatic brain injury is that it looks different for different people. Like, there really is no norm. And some people, their personalities completely change. Some people don't. Some people become violent and mean and aggressive, and some people become softer. And so I felt like it was really wide open to kind of what the story needed. And so I really felt like in order for this family to move forward, he kind of needed to be a different person.
Right, and he is very much softer. You know, he was an abusive husband and father
yes.
up until that point.
Yeah,
I am assuming, and maybe I should not assume, but I'm assuming that maybe Piper was the easiest of the three voices to channel.
You know, yes and no. Hers came the most naturally because she's a mother and I'm a mother. Fred's was really fun to write. It was really fun to kind of forget about grammar and all those things that kind of keep you penned in as a writer and just write as a 10-year-old boy.
Did your son help? I mean, your son obviously was older at this point, but did he consult at all?
No, he had no interest at all in this. He did read the book when the advanced reader copy came out like 6 months ago. He read it and he said, this is actually good. I was like, well, thank you. So, no, he didn't have any input at all. The part that was the hardest was Lance, and I was mostly worried because I'm not a, 70-year-old man. And so I was mostly worried about getting that right. But
well, and the impression that's hard to shake is that Lance, after his brain injury, sees the world and kind of describes it in a way very much the way Fred does.
Yes. Yes. And that that was kind of the point where I hoped that the two of them could connect. Him kind of – Lance losing all of the anger and all of those things that he carried from his past life with Fred, who as a child had a kind of more innocent worldview anyway.
Going back to Piper for a moment, for being a sympathetic heroine, she is a far from perfect character.
Yes. Someone, another reviewer described her as annoying, which I can't disagree with because I really wanted her to be intense. And a lot of people say, well, that must be you. And I said, I'm not that intense, I hope. She has strong feelings. She has strong, she's thinking all the time. Her brain is constantly going. And she makes some decisions that even I, as the writer, was kind of like, not sure about that.
But she was also raised, she also grew up in a household with a really overbearing father.
She did. And I wanted to make sure there's certain points in the book where she comes kind of face to face with that, not necessarily on her own, but other people saying, hey, wait a second, look at what you're doing. And that was a surprise for her. And I think that ultimately helps her kind of get a better look at herself from other people's views.
She does not give a lot of people any breaks, including herself.
She does not. Nope. Not at all. Except Fred.
Right.
Fred gets a lot of breaks because he's her baby.
Obviously, not everyone who reads this will share the exact experiences that your characters are going through or have gone through. But what would you want to leave your readers with? What do you hope that when they put this book down, when they're done with it, aside from, writing a spectacular review, what would you hope they're left with?
Wow. I hope that they kind of have a new point of view into a person that's nothing like them. There are so many things that parents of special needs, of children with special needs, go through that if you have a neurotypical child or a normally developing child, that don't ever really cross your path. And there's a lot of emotion and heart and really hard stuff that parents of children with disabilities deal with. And I hope that people will kind of have a better understanding of what that feels like. I also really hope that people will start to think about autism as a spectrum. It used to be what Fred has, or what he was diagnosed with, used to be called Asperger's. And a couple years ago, they changed the name of that. They changed the entire designation to autism spectrum disorder because they realized that it is a spectrum. There are no two people on the spectrum that look the same. Everybody looks different. And so Fred is at the high end of that spectrum. And that's something that I wanted people to recognize, that there is a wide range. And just because a child is verbal, and Fred's super in touch with people's emotions and things, but he does struggle in other areas.
Well, was it especially rewarding for you to be able to portray someone who is dealing with a whole family, honestly, but Fred in particular, in what's really, a nuanced but overall positive way?
Yes, it was. It's a hard road for them. It's a difficult road for them. But I feel like by the time they get to the end, Piper has kind of worked through her sadness and her regret even. And she's really ashamed that she didn't figure it out, because she feels like she knows him better than anyone. She should have seen it. She works through that guilt. And I think that everybody understands each other better, and everyone just kind of accepts that this is who this kid is, and he's amazing.
Writer is not your full-time job.
No,
you work at a preschool, right?
I do. I teach 4K in Madison, Wisconsin.
How did that work afford you any energy to write fiction?
Oh, it's hard. So when I started this book, it was like my second year teaching. And the idea was, I work in the mornings, so I would come home and I would eat lunch and I would sit down at the computer and I would write until my children came home from school. And some days that worked really well. Other days it did not. I found out Law and Order is on all day on Wednesdays. So Wednesdays I'd get nothing done. But I tend to write in spurts. My husband is super supportive. And if I say I really need all day Saturday to get some writing done, no problem. He's on top of, the house, the kids, the dogs and everything. And
well, Rebecca Brown, it's a terrific book. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And
Thank you.
Hope we'll see you again.
Yes, I would love to come back.
Madison writer and preschool teacher Rebecca Brown's new novel is called Flying at Night. She'll talk about it tomorrow evening at Boswell Book Company. There's a link to more at wuwm.com.